Hey everyone, welcome to Season 3 of Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. This podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world from the artistry to the business so you can discover the resources available to you and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate the extra effort. So without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is a bona fide music connoisseur in the purest sense, spending her entire childhood around radio DJs. At just 14 years old, she was organizing shows, which led to music photography, tour support, and full-blown management and marketing. Fast forward to age 23, she'd started her own marketing agency, which just transitioned from a services approach to a coaching model in 2018. Now that sounds like quite the resume, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. So please welcome the founder of Kitten Teeth, co-founder of Woman in Music, owner of the cat feature in Eden, now streaming on Netflix, the woman who's helping artists turn their passions into their livelihood while creating an equitable space in the music world, an absolute business badass, Nikki Barron.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going good.
So I guess first things first, how did your cat make it into Eden?
She was not my cat when she was in Eden. I adopted her right afterwards. So,
very cool.
Yeah, she was in that movie because she was owned by this woman who had animal actors, and then she wasn't taking really good care of them. So there was a thing in the newspaper in Ellensburg about this and how she had all these pets that needed to be adopted. So, yeah, that's how I ended up with Clementine.
I wasn't aware that actor pets was a thing.
Yeah, animal actors. It's
animal
a thing.
Animal actors.
Yeah. And there used to be a really big film industry here in Washington. You probably heard about the changes that are happening at the Office of Music and Film. But yeah, this was probably 7 years ago. There used to be grants and tax benefits for shooting here. So there was actually a lot of movies being shot in Washington. And so there was a booming industry for cat actors, apparently.
Cat actors. That's so funny. Yeah, I figured they were trained, but I never
she
knew
was
that there was
a
like
kitten.
Yeah.
So it's so Beau Bridges, and if you watch the movie Eden, it's based on a true story in Washington. It's about a woman who gets kidnapped and is held in a sex trafficking organization, and then she like basically is like a sleeper, like she just stays in this organization, gets them to trust her, and then the first opportunity she has, like 10 years later, she breaks out and goes to the police and the FBI and like brings this entire organization down.
Whoa.
And the main villain is played by Beau Bridges, and there's a scene where he's like giving a monologue and he's holding Clementine in the air and he's like shaking her, and I'm like, that's my baby.
Oh no.
She was like maybe, I don't know, like a month or two old at the time, so she's not really like doing anything except for like crying, but
she sold it really well.
Yeah, I tried to make her an IMDb page, but they said no.
That's awesome.
They were like, this doesn't count.
Yeah, that would be fascinating if you could just get all your cat's credits and just take the royalties in that way.
Yeah,
taking a step back to you getting started, your mom was a sales manager at a radio station in Texas. Mm-hmm. Do you mind walking me through what that was like growing up with radio around and how that influenced your interest and appreciation of music?
Yeah. My first job was voicing kids and commercials for local companies because a lot of people think like, oh, this must get sent off. Like, no, like it just gets made in-house in these little towns, and it's just like a bunch of people that they just bring in to like play these random people in the commercials. So I played little kid parts. And it was really cool. Like all my, you know, kind of the adults I grew up with were big character types, you know, cause it was like mainstream commercial radio. So it's like the morning show type people, who actually sound like that. They're not making a voice. They actually sound like that. So that's like I think a weird thing that people are like, oh, they're doing a voice. It's like, no, they just talk like that all the time, which is really fascinating. But it was really cool. I mean, I started going to music events when I was super young because my mom would be working and it would be her client or her account. And if she didn't have a sitter, she would just take us all with her. So yeah, I've seen live music. I think the first live music I went to, I was like 6 or 7 with her. And then I grew. And then from there, I actually got my first job in the radio station. I was the receptionist and sat right at the front and had all the booths on, you know, either side with the morning shows happening and the, you know, 5 o'clock drive and all of that stuff. So I grew up just listening to music constantly. And my mom is really young, so very Texan. But she's super young. So she's only 20 years older than I am. So she has really good taste in music. So I just grew up listening to like Elton John and like really amazing, like classics. Cause she was super hip and cool. She still is, but yeah, she still works in radio. But yeah, I just grew up on, you know, going and sitting under her desk during the day when I would be homesick from school, and hearing her make business deals and coach her sales team. And, you know, you always say you're not going to grow up and be like your parents. And then you absolutely grow up and you're exactly like your parents. Like I'm just like the perfect blend of my mom and my dad now.
Right.
So
on.
Yeah. And definitely obsessed with music. And so is she. So yeah.
Do you feel like you were picking up sales and marketing snippets along the way? Or were you more like thinking, oh, this is my folks' job, I'm not super concerned with it?
No, I picked up a lot. She was really good about making sure that I was a good extension of who she was. So I see it now, and you see kids like you'll meet them and everyone's like, oh, like, you know, she doesn't make eye contact. My mom made me say like, hello, and like put my hand out and shake their hand and introduce myself and be kind of like a little businesswoman and expose me to other women that were doing business. So my godmothers are, one was the manager of a Ford dealership and the other one managed the newspaper. So I grew up with these like media business women who were just always talking about work, and I was just there. Yeah. So I picked up so much of that. And then I think just my ability to take a no and keep trucking forward comes from her, because my mom doesn't know the meaning of the word.
Yeah.
No means not right now. Uh-huh. So come back later. Come back when you have another idea. It doesn't mean no. So that I picked up from her, definitely.
And then the flip side, with the folks that are coming through the radio station, you mentioned it was mainstream radio. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have big artists coming through that you recognized?
I don't know if you remember the band Bowling for Soup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I was so excited. And they played in my hometown and I got to meet them at Bayside. Do you remember them? It was like more like main, like the not like either country or like rock were like the two I was really interested in. So yeah, I got to meet both of them and that was just like, oh my God.
Did it take away the mystique of it all when these folks are coming through on a consistent basis in real life?
I still get weird about when I meet people that I really admire, but the experience did teach me to just be normal about it. So inside I'm like losing my mind, but on the outside I'm like being cool.
Yeah.
There are certain people that I have met as an adult that I could not contain myself. And I definitely said like weird stuff and got like weird about it. But yeah, I would say it helped me. It helped normalize the music industry. I like to watch like movies that are like based on like the music industry, like back in the day. And you see these women who are like, I get to go backstage and all this. And I'm like, I've never been impressed by getting to go backstage because I've been going backstage since I was like 7 years old. So I think it kind of took that out of it, which is probably good if you're like a young, impressionable woman to like not be impressed by the stuff that doesn't matter.
Right. Especially when it's not even that crazy.
Yeah. We were like, okay. You're like, actually, cool. It's kind of dirty back
exactly.
here.
I was just about to say, it's really gross and
yeah.
The band hasn't showered in however long.
Because yeah, they're on the road. I feel like I should.
Is it slipping?
I'm going to move this up. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really funny though. I agree. I think that's a really good thing. My partner and I were talking and we were doing like this video that actually never ended up coming out, but we were basically taking the band members and interviewing their partners. And we were like, what's the most surprising thing? And she was like, that it's not even really that cool. Like, I don't get to do cool stuff. It's just
Yeah. And it's just, they're tired and stressed and they're about to go on stage. And so it's like not as cool as you think it's going to be. But I mean, I see the appeal, but I also am glad that I never had the illusions about it, because it made me be able to get in there and get to work and not feel intimidated and not be like, oh, that's an industry I can't work in. Because as far as I knew, it was the same as like being a banker. There's not a lot of opportunity. So I worked for my mom because that was like a really good paying job, and fell in love with it.
Was it, this is great for the short term, or was it, this is a career trajectory that I'm on now, I'm going to work in music?
I was booking shows for my friends' bands when I was a teenager, like 14 was when I first started. And when I needed to make significant money, I was like, okay, I guess I'll go work for my mom. Cause she was like, if you ever want a job, like come work, you can. I started as a receptionist, then I became the sales assistant, and then I went into sales. And the whole way through I had training. And so it just kind of felt really natural, and it felt like a good fit. So I don't think I ever thought I was going to do it forever. I think when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a chef. And I do like to cook, so that's okay. But yeah, it just kind of rolled and it kept rolling. And I had a knack for it. And so it just kind of kept growing. So I did my first shows when I was a teenager. I liked it. I liked being able to bring people together. I liked being a facilitator for art. So I just kept doing it for my friends. And sort of, I just started filling in the gaps. Like, oh, my friend's band needs photos. I've got a camera. I'll take pictures. You need someone to do your MySpace, because that's how old I am. yeah, I can do that. Like, whatever, you know. So I just was filling in these spots and I was good at it. And then it helped transition into a job working for my mom. And then from there, I never thought about it as like, I'm going to stay and work in the music industry. It was, I just wanted to do cool stuff that was like creative and challenging, and it just kept kind of falling that way. I left the music world and worked in fashion for a while. My main job right now is for a software company doing marketing for them, but I never get my foot out of that music world. It's always been my passion. It fills me up.
How did sales inform your approach to music, and what do you think artists who are starting out can learn from sales and marketing tactics that will actually help them in the long run?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. The first is that there probably is a friend in your community that does want to help you, and you just have to accept the help. There's a book, The Art of Asking, and she talks about this group of people that I consider myself to be a part of. And she's like, they're the helpers. They're the ones that show up that will run merch for you and not ask you to get paid, or they'll run your social media. So you've got people that want to get into what you're doing and contribute to your art. And if they're offering to do it, finding a way to let them contribute. And if you have the money, paying them for it, of course. But if not, figuring out what type of trade you can do. It started out as just getting to go to their shows for free. And then I started taking a cut of the door for putting the shows together. For photos, I got to practice and do the shoots I wanted to do, and they would model for me and they'd get the photos and I'd get to make my art. So we found ways to make that relationships like beneficial for everybody. And then from a sales perspective, I think what I took from all of it is that my mom used to say this, like, a closed mouth don't get fed. You have to ask for what you want, and you can't be afraid to ask for it. And you have to be able to showcase what value you have. So if you're being really self-conscious and you're talking about your music in a really like wishy-washy way, then the booker's not going to want to book you. The other bands are not going to want to play with you. Like, there's so many things that go into it. So just being able to ask for what you want and being confident that you deserve it is like the first thing you learn in sales, because if you show weakness, they're going to say no.
Absolutely. Especially on those first messages, for those who are starting out and you're emailing a venue the first time. To your point, you're not going to get in if you're like, I totally understand if you don't want us, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you're putting all these doubts in their mind before they even get a chance to listen to your music. And there's a line there. You don't want to go in and be like, we're the greatest band ever and we're going to sell out when it's your first show. But if you say, I mean, there's a way to be frank and confident and also be realistic about what you can and can't do. And that's a huge part of sales. You don't want to oversell. You don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. You want to underpromise and overdeliver. And it's a little bit of an art and a skill you kind of pick up as you get older, I think, in general. So if you're really young, good luck. Just wait. Experience will help you feel more confident about yourself. But also you can just practice.
And so what was your timeline then to the Pacific Northwest? Because you're in Texas, right? And you're working, was that at the same station?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. And so what did that transition look like? And I don't mean to skip some steps, so feel free to fill in the gaps there. But yeah, what did that kind of brought you up here?
Yeah. So at the time I was dating someone who lived in another city. And we both hated where we were from. We were like, we're going to go move somewhere else. And so we started talking about where we would go and why. And Seattle was my one that I was like, we should go there. All my favorite bands are from there. I could go work at KEXP, which I have never even applied to. But I was like, I'll go work at KEXP. Yeah. And, you know, you can go and make music. He's a musician. And so that was the whole plan. And then the beginning of the summer, he broke up with me and I was like, well, I'm not going to stay here. I've already been saving up. I've already told everybody I know I'm going. Mm-hmm. And my job was going to let me transfer to the radio station in Yakima. And so I was like, well, I can't like back out now. Like there's all these people waiting on me. So yeah, I just packed up my car and moved to Ellensburg because I didn't want to live in Yakima. I visited and it was terrible. Sorry, Yakima. So I moved to Ellensburg, the lovely town, just like 30 minutes through the canyon, where I met all my friends and made my music community, the first part of my music community here in the Northwest. And I just commuted back and forth. But yeah, so that was when I was 21. So I made that trip and moved here. And on the 4th of July, yeah. Wow. I rolled into town on the 4th of July. It was awesome. I had actually never been to Seattle.
So. Wow. Was that a culture shock?
No, I mean, I've been to cities, so I knew like what it was like. But yeah, it was pretty cool. Like driving in, I came in on I-5 and just like having all these like giant trees like coming up in between the sides of the freeway and like it was really cool. And then the ocean, and I had never seen anything like that before. So that was really cool. But yeah, it was a little bit of a shock. It was great because I got to go back and live in Ellensburg, which is about the size of the town that I'm from. So it was like, that was not a culture shock, but I got to come like every weekend to Seattle.
Nice. So it wasn't just like drop you in Cap Hill
kind no. of thing. And when I moved here, I moved to Ballard. So it was like still very small town vibes, even though you're yeah. like in the city, you're kind of like in a little like cocoon, where you, everything's right there. It's super walkable. Like, so it was not super shocking. I remember the first time I went to Capitol Hill, it was on New Year's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just it was on New Year's. We were celebrating. Yeah. There. And like somebody had set off fireworks. So there was like a fog, like smoke everywhere. And there were cops on horseback. And it was like it looked like a war zone. Like, like people were throwing up and like, it was like,
yeah, it was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. I was like 22 on New Year's. And I was just like,
what is happening?
What? Yeah. It was kooky, but super fun. I mean, I have a wild hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is so funny. So you're at this radio station in, was it during this time that you started your own marketing agency?
Yes, I'd always been doing it. So when I moved to Ellensburg, I met music people and immediately they were like, oh, you're a photographer. I need pictures. Oh, you do this. Like I was doing an online class for building websites and they're like, I need a website. So I just started doing it for musicians again in Ellensburg. So there was like maybe a 6-month gap where I wasn't doing something for a band. Mm-hmm. Nice. So that's how it started again. Yeah, it started up again and it was my side hustle. It was great. It helped me pay off all the costs it took to get to Washington, which was great. So yeah, I side hustled that for quite a few years, and my job ended up transitioning into, when I finished my program, they hired me to be a web developer for the radio station.
Oh, nice.
So I was developing websites for them and designing for them. Ended up deciding I didn't like people telling me what to make. So I was like, I'll just redesign. I'll just like retrain and become a designer. So I went to a graphic design program and did that. And was it, then they let me transition from the development team to the design team. I realized like, oh, I still don't get to decide what, what gets made. I still have to listen to someone else. So I was like, well, who's telling me what I'm doing? Oh, marketing is. So I started retraining to do marketing. And then at that point, I ended up moving to Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, no way. I went to University of Oregon.
I see your sweater.
Yeah, I'm wearing an Oregon shirt.
And I went to work for Will Leather Goods as a marketing manager for them, specializing in digital. And then their head of marketing quit, and I was working directly for her. So they were like, now you're head of marketing, 24-year-old. That or 25. I think I was 25. 25-year-old. I was like, what? So I just started doing that. And I was still side hustling all my Seattle clients still. Seattle, all my friends from Ellensburg graduated college and moved to Seattle. So I just kept working for them. I did not like living in Eugene. I mean, it was cool, like, some, like a little bit, but
it's very much like college student or
old people.
So there's I can see that being pretty tough.
It's pretty tough when you're like not in college, but you're also like trying to build a career. And so really there's like three places you can work: the university, like Norton Antivirus,
yeah,
and Wilt Leather Goods. Those are like the places you can work in Eugene.
So
I moved back to Seattle, and at that point worked for a co-working space, and the guy was awful and fired me. And it was at that point that I was like, I'm done working for other people. I'm done having people tell me what to make that's ugly. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm done working for people who all they care about is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I was like, I'm gonna go full time.
Right.
And I remember that moment talking to the guy I was dating at the time, and he's like, you can't quit your job because I need to quit my job, and you got to go back and ask for your job back. And the guy had fired me after saying fuck you to me because I had said something he didn't like. And I was like, you can't say fuck you to me. Fuck you. And he was like, no, fuck you. So it was like we just like said fuck you to each other a bunch. And then he fired me. And
it was just a difference of opinion kind of thing.
Yeah. I was saying we needed to get rid of this content writer, and he was saying, no, like he said, you don't have any, and it's very gendered. A lot of people don't realize, but like there's this expectation for women that not only do we need to be amazing and great at our jobs, we also have to be like very kind and thoughtful and like have a really high emotional intelligence and sort of process the entire male staff's like emotions. Mm-hmm. And so he was saying that I didn't show enough gratitude for the work that she had done, and that I was like, and I'm like, well, I could care about gratitude, or I could care about your bottom line, and she's wasting money, and that her stuff is not good, and I've tried coaching her and she's not listening, and I think that we need to find another solution here. So he technically told the whole company he fired me because I didn't show enough gratitude. And I'm not going to show gratitude for bad work.
Yeah.
She was doing a bad job, and I tried talking to her and making it better. It wasn't working. But, you know, no one would ever fire a man for not having enough like gratitude for someone doing a bad job.
I was even going to say, I don't think that's a fireable offense.
I think legally you can fire someone for anything, but you know, yeah, I thought it was pretty crazy. Wasn't a good man.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it.
So yeah, he sucked, but it was great because it opened up so many things. When that happened and he said, fuck you to me, I had a moment of going like, no, you don't get to say that to me. And when I told my boyfriend at the time what happened, and his response was like, no, you need to go ask for your job back. And he was very nice about it. Like everything he said was fine. He said, you don't have enough experience as a freelancer. You don't have enough clients. All your clients are musicians. They don't have any resources, like this isn't gonna work. And when he said that to me, I knew instantly it was going to work, and that this person didn't understand me, like, and that it's a misconception that everyone has. And so I started my agency, broke up with that boyfriend, sold everything I had basically to like save up to be, I was so worried I was not gonna have enough money. The next day I landed a client and I've been on my own basically ever since. This last year I took a job at a software company who was a client of mine, Masson Labs. And I literally only took it because I love this team so much that like I worked here as a freelancer for 4 years as an interim head of marketing. It was supposed to be 6 months.
Oh, no
and
way.
Then 4 years later, everyone's like, wait, why don't you actually work here? And I'm like, I don't know. I love it.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So I closed down my business at that point because I couldn't handle full-time work and all my clients. Mm-hmm. And so I transitioned into coaching from there because I kept getting hit up for like really cool projects, but I didn't have time to actually do it. I could tell them how to do it, but I couldn't do it for them. And I had previously been telling them how to do it and actually turning the wrenches on it. And so I was like, I'll teach you how to turn the wrenches. So I did that for this past year, and that's been super fun and rewarding. And I've learned so much about how I can help musicians, because we don't just talk about marketing and business and, those types of things, but we also talk about mindset and accountability and structure. And I've learned a lot about what at the root causes musicians to struggle in marketing and business.
Oh, what do you think that is, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, there's a few, and I think it's different for everybody. But I think that there's a lot of shame around taking yourself seriously in the arts in general. Like, you're less cool, you're less of an artist if you take yourself seriously. You're less cool, you're less of an artist if you want to get paid for your work. If you really loved it, you would just do it for free if you were actually passionate. And it's so shameful. Mm-hmm. And it's so shame driven, and everybody benefits from that shame that artists feel for that. So I think those are big ones. I think also it's so close to you. It's really hard to be like, does this have a dollar value? Because to me, it's everything. And to you, it's worth what, $6 for my EP or something, you know, like that's hard. Mm-hmm. And that is a struggle that I have no, I have no words of wisdom on, because that's hard. Yeah. And the industry is changing. And when you see that you put your heart and soul into a song and then you look and you have like 50 streams and you made a penny, you're like, what do I even do this for? You know? So there's that. And then also I think that there's a lack of resources. There's not a lot of people out there like me who are like, hey, I'm going to tell you all the things I learned at my, you know, multi-million dollar marketing job and all the things we do to make millions of dollars for this company. I can actually flip that on its head and show you how to do all those same things for your music. I'm not saying you're going to go out the gate and make millions of dollars, but you'll at least, be able to take some of those principles into what you're doing and turn really your band or your art into a business. So that's kind of the core of what I've been able to get at from working with people and not just going, here, let me do it for you, but let me teach you how to fish.
Which I think is super important and a really cool thing, because to your point, when folks don't learn how to do it, they might just get back into that mindset of the art, and it just needs to speak for itself while other people push it. But understanding how to push it or deliver that value.
The thing is people, there's kind of like buckets of the type of people you can work with. There's the people who will work with anybody and they're going to waste your money. There's the people who only want you when you're already valuable. So how do you get to the valuable part to get the people who are worth anything to want to work with you? And then you have the people who I really look to, like people like Macklemore, where he saw from the very beginning that he had to take himself really seriously and do the work and learn the work and get the people around him that he could learn from to make his own career. And now, yeah, he's on a label now, but he absolutely does not have to be. That is a choice and he's in charge. And so he gets to drive what happens. And that power is so important, because if you're so desperate for somebody to help you, it's so easy to like let them take advantage of you. And so you kind of want to you want to get to the place where you're in that third bucket of like people want you, and but you're so knowledgeable about you, about what you're doing, that they can't take advantage of that desire to let them help you. Because that's really what happens. You hear of so many artists who like get to that mid-level, they sign to a label, they make a record, and the label says, oh, we actually don't like this record, we're not going to release it, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, because you signed it away.
Yeah, or I have a friend who had a sync on like a major television show. It was a $40,000 payout. At the end of the day, each band member made $1,000 after everybody took their cut.
Oh, geez. Like publishing, label, all that.
Yes, yes. Yikes. So like that happens too, because they didn't want to do all the middleman stuff and they didn't know how to negotiate all the middleman stuff. So when they got a really cool opportunity, a year's salary basically in one hit, they were kind of screwed over because they just didn't have the right stuff in place. But they were so green and young when they signed and they just didn't know.
Yeah. So, oh, that's so sad.
It is so sad. But I see the desire. I don't know what I would do if somebody came to me and said, here, let me tell you everything you've ever wanted to hear and take all the stress and hard parts of what you're trying to do off your plate and just let you create. Like, how do you say no to that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. But, and sometimes it works. There's labels out there that do amazing work for people, mm-hmm. and you see it where it's a true partnership and the right people are in those positions. But I would say that's rare. That's yeah. not the, that's the exception and not the rule.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there was the role, like the firing that took place, the altercation, the guy was really shitty to you. And so did that influence how you approached your own business and then inspire you to co-found Women in Music?
Definitely. It definitely made me really gun shy to people, especially men. Almost all my clients have always been women. I feel safer there. And it's every gender can be shitty, and I've had shitty female clients, but I've always felt like in that space, I was helping other women grow what they're working on, their passion projects, and that they were helping me heal from this really poor experience. And that was just the experience I had with him was just the icing on the cake. Basically, it was the straw that just broke it, because everything else, I had experienced so much sexism and ageism in my career that I was so done and fried that I was like, I'm in charge. I work with who I want to work with, and I make all the decisions. And I was very adamant about that. So even the startups that I work with or that I've worked with in the past have all been creatively based. Like at Matson Labs, we make software for photographers. I've worked with like other creative coaches, people like that. So it's always like photographers and painters and muralists and other artists, jewelry makers. So it's always arts based. Even when I was doing marketing as a service, I was focusing on people who were pursuing their passions. They weren't just like, I got an idea and I decided to make, you know, time management software or something.
Yeah. Very cool. And so for those who aren't familiar, do you mind highlighting what Women in Music is?
Yeah. So Women in Music, we are an organization of 700 members here in the Northwest of women and allies who work to make the industry more equitable. And what that means is we don't just focus on making things even. We also focus on making sure that the gaps that created that disparity get closed. So that's what Women in Music is. And I started that with Sarah Gerritsen. She was a client and she was like, hey, we should do something for women. Because I've been reaching out to all these women in music organizations and no one gets back to me. No one's doing anything here in Seattle. And like, we need to do something about it because I'm just tired of all the mess, to put it bluntly.
And so, it's an old school industry too. So
yeah,
I guess casual listeners context, think about the progress we're making in business as a whole, then go back probably a couple decades.
Oh, absolutely.
For music.
Absolutely. It's a boys club for sure. So our goal is to shake it up, turn it on its head. And we do that through educational programming. So we talk similar to this podcast, we figure out what is the information that is really hard and accessible for women to get to help their careers grow. And we go get those experts and we do panels and workshops and other programming. We also work as consultants, so we can help book music in your event space. So or if we've done a lot of female-founded startups, we'll do events and use us to hire. We've consulted with clubs and other venues when they're having gender-based issues and discrimination, things that happen. We come in and help consult on how to approach that and make it better. We also are working on partnerships with larger music organizations to make sure that they're working towards creating gender equity and racial equity. We really focus on being an intersectional organization. So that's kind of how we go about doing that.
And for those who aren't familiar, do you mind just walking through intersectionality and what that means within the context of like activism or any of this kind of work?
Yeah. So the kind of the way I like to look at intersectional is we look at the person as a whole. So if you're a queer Black woman, your experience is going to be different than me as a cisgendered white woman. Although we share our female identification, for me to dismiss that she's also Black and also queer really dismisses her as a person. So when we make programs and we consult on policy and we work on these projects, we think about making sure that we're not just doing what's best for me, white cisgendered woman, but what's actually going to be best for the person who has the intersection of all three of those areas. So that's our goal, is we're always thinking about that. It's hard. We mess up. As a white woman, I try really hard to make it work, and I'm really fortunate that we have an organization that's really open, so people tell me when I'm messing up. But our goal is to be intersectional.
When you all started this, what have you found? What changes do you find are most prevalent or most needed at a macro level? Because it's regional, correct?
So we are working on getting set up so that we can be a global organization, but right now we are based here in Seattle.
Okay, right on. So I guess, what issues do you find are prevalent in the scene, and how can the general populace also contribute to making it a more equitable space?
The number one thing I see is a lot of white male cisgender bands playing with other white male cisgender bands. So, and then people saying it's not my fault because there's no other band that sounds like us that can play on my show that has a draw. And it's a lie. It's just a flat lie. People aren't willing to do the work to meet people outside of their five friends that they hang out with, which from a business perspective doesn't make sense either, because if you just keep playing with the same bands, you're just sharing the same audience instead of going out and saying like, oh, I play Americana music. So does Stephanie Ann Johnson. We have totally different fans. I'm going to go ask her if I can open for her, or vice versa. And now we get to share fans. So my fans get to hear her, and now her fans get to hear me. And we're both Americana artists. Like, that just makes sense. But if you're not friends with her, why would, you know, most people aren't going to go ask her. But it through Women in Music, our goal is that if you don't know, if you're a guy who's like, okay, well, I don't know any women who play in my genre, you can just come to us and say, hey, who should I book for this? I need another person. And I can say, here's a list of bands, or we have a playlist on Spotify. If you search for Women in Music, you can find our account. And we have a playlist for the Northwest, and it's categorized by genre. So if you just go and kind of listen through the list, you'll hear everything that, you know, we've got going. So you'll be able to find a band that will fit your bill. So that's the number one thing I see happening. And as far as musicians go, go out and listen to other people's music. Go find, you know, bands that you have never heard of. If you like their music, go see them live. Don't just keep going and seeing your friends' bands. And if you're someone who just goes and participates in music as a listener, do the same thing. And don't go to shows where it's all white guy bands. And don't just not go, but send a message on Facebook to the bands and say, hey, I really wanted to go support your show, but I noticed that all you do is book this way. I would love to support you. And next time you book a show, if you can make sure that you bring in more women and more people of color, you can count me in as a fan. And I do it to this day. Every time I get a Facebook invite, if I go look and it's all white guy bands, I will just send them a message and be like, hey, I'm not going to go to this show. I think you could have asked these three bands to play and it would have been a more a more equal representation of the music industry here, but I can't go and support this because I have to put my money where my mouth is. So I can't keep paying to go see bands, go see shows that are just so homogenous.
With that, what resources, so Women in Music is of course a resource. What other resources do you recommend for folks to take action on that?
There's, at least in my experience, there's Facebook groups for like every music scene in every city. I know I'm in one for Seattle and Austin and Nashville. And you can go in there and just put a call out and just say specifically, hey, this is the kind of band I'm looking for and I'd like to book, and just put it out there. And then also just be not afraid to make mistakes. Put it on your Facebook page or Instagram and say, hey, I'm trying to be a better ally. Somebody hooked me up with a band that is not going to look just like me, but is in my genre that we could have fun playing with. So that's what I would say. It's just like, tell people you're trying to make a change. And some people are going to get mad at you because they don't think there's a problem. And some people are going to get mad at you because you're going to word it wrong. And you just say, oops, thanks for letting me know.
I think that's an important thing too, is it's one of those you're just going to miss on verbiage, especially when it's online.
Yeah. Or you just say something offhand. You don't realize, like, once I was having a coffee with Whitney Monger. She's a queer Black artist here in Seattle. She plays like blues and Americana. And we were having coffee and I was like, I love Seattle because it's so progressive. And she just like stopped me and was like, no, it's not. And then listed the ways that it is very much not a progressive city. And it was really hard to hear. I was like, oh no, she hates me now. But she was so gracious to like teach me about that and help me understand what it's like to live in her experience. And I just took it in and was like, cool. All right. I can take this and learn, and I can pass this forward and say, hey, I learned this today. And this was from their experience and I didn't live it. And I can't imagine what it's like, but the education of it was really helpful. So just being open and not apologizing, but just saying thank you. Because if you apologize, then you kind of put them in the situation of going, oh, it's okay.
Right. And it's not necessarily.
No, it's a thank you. Yeah. It's a thank you, not a sorry. I learned also from her. So, yeah.
Oh, very cool. I like that. And so looking through that lens, we talked about a few items that need to be addressed. What are we doing well? And what is there still that needs to be addressed? Because I'm sure there's a lot of the latter.
What are we doing well? I think I'm seeing a lot more showcases for women in music, which I think is really fantastic. I think we're doing a better job of understanding that there's a problem. So I think that's the first step. I think people are getting less defensive. So I think that's a good thing. The things that we need to work on, a few things that I personally, and hopefully the organization can work on too, is I would love to see more women that work in the event spaces. So more women that are bouncers and run security, more women that are bartenders, more women that are front of house, back of house people. Because when you have an experience, I had a friend who had an experience at a local club where a guy was groping her. And when she went to talk to the security guard, he was a total asshole to her. He couldn't empathize at all what she was going through. Mm-hmm. And if it was a woman, she would have been like, yeah, that guy needs to get thrown out, you know? But he was just like, then don't stand next to him. Like, that was his response instead of helping her. Mm-hmm. And so putting more women in those spaces is just going to create a better environment. I think also putting women in positions of power and decision making, like all, I think we have like maybe two women bookers in town that I can think of that are like legit bookers at venues, like work and have salaries, you know, from these venues. There's like two of them. The Connor Byrne has a woman booker. And then there's also a woman booker at Nick Miniman's in Tacoma.
Oh, nice.
The Spanish Ballroom. And then I think the Royal Room just hired a woman. So there's three if you count Tacoma. I know women who are promoters who like put on shows at venues all over town, but like actually are hired employees. I think they're the only ones that I can think of. Actually, no, Gwen at the Crocodile.
Oh.
So there, but like, that's not very
Shouldn't
many.
Have to be racking our brains. We had to like think,
and I'm like an expert in this. And even I'm going, maybe there's one more, maybe. So more bookers, because they're going to be more aware of building more balanced shows. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a huge thing, is just getting more women on the ground level out there working, in the industry, not just as musicians, but as skilled work. I think that's a huge part of it. I would love to see shows start earlier and have better load-in practices, because imagine being a mom and your load-in's at 5. You don't play till 11 and it's Tuesday. Guess who didn't get to put her kids to bed, you know? And it's not the same for men. Like, yeah, men didn't get to put their kids to bed, but they don't get shamed for not putting their kids to bed. But women do. So there's an extra pressure that she feels every time she wants to play a show that her husband wouldn't have to feel. He might feel guilty, but the society's not going to guilt him about it.
Right.
So I would love to see weekday shows start earlier. I think it would also, from a business perspective, make more sense because it would bump up against happy hour for tech people here in Seattle that, you know, we get so upset that they're not taking advantage of the booming music scene, but we also don't start the local band until 10. And you're like, well, I have to work at my tech job the next day, so I can't go out. So some of the venues in town have been really cool. They've been doing that experiment with me. So at the Tractor, we've been doing early shows on Mondays and Tuesdays. So they start at, and they have a happy hour special.
That I think is truly so much smarter because what's so funny to me is having rant warning, I guess, is being told we want you on, we would love you for this bill. It's a Wednesday. And we're like, okay, well, our audience, knowing who they are in a tech market, the 21 to 35 for us personally is like, that's who we're targeting. They're not going to come to a show at where we're on at 10, 10:30, 11 in pay. Either we need to switch to the weekend and we'll get you 100 people plus, or we're not getting you folks. And I truly believe every artist would bring more people if the show is earlier in the week.
Yeah, we just need to retrain the audiences too, because that's the other thing is they don't know. So if everybody in town was doing it that way, I think it'd be different.
Yeah.
You look at models that, I'm not saying this is a perfect model by any means, but like the SoFar people, they sell out their shows at sometimes three times the ticket price. No one knows who's playing.
Yeah.
And they sell their shows out and the shows start much earlier. Mm-hmm. And they get out, like, I think they usually get out like around 10.
Yep.
So they're done early. And it's all those tech people that are doing it that are buying those tickets. And they want to go have a couple of drinks and see music. That's why they moved here. If you look at the city of Seattle, they did a report on the economy of Seattle. And one of the main drivers of tech people here, they choose here and not San Francisco, is the music industry and the arts. So we're here. They want to come participate, but we're really living in an old model. So I think that would be huge just for bands in general. But for women, it would be really cool to be able to like get home and be a mom. You know, we had a conversation in our Facebook group where women were talking about how many of them have regrets because they decided not to have children because they were told from day one, like, if you're serious about this, you need to be on the road. And that means no kids. And that sucks because no one's telling men that they can't have kids and they just need to go on the road. They're like, oh, go on the road, have kids, and your wife will just stay home and take care of them. But if you're a woman, you don't get that luxury. And so some of them were talking about how like, wow, I wish that they're not to a place where they're making a middle-class living. They're still struggling financially and they're going, what did I make all these sacrifices for? And so if we made the industry better for them, you know, through better show setups, higher paid streaming, more targeted sync and licensing opportunities. If you could compose music and make it at home, you could also be able to have a family. So I think there's so many amazing opportunities for the music industry for women that, as they're built now, make it hard for us.
Absolutely. And that's up at the mainstream level too. I remember Cardi B said she hid her pregnancy because, and then when she finally told her like core team, she was like 4 or 5 months pregnant and they were like, your career is going to be over. And she was just starting. And that's what people at the highest level were telling her. So she's already a bona fide superstar, whether you love her or not, she had made it. And everyone around her was saying basically what you were just saying, like, oh, well then your career is done.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck.
Which is not,
it's not
true. Like, she's proven that wrong also, but yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of women out there that are making it work, but if you're in that tier of Cardi B, like, yeah, you can make it work. Beyonce makes it work.
Yeah, she's making tens of millions.
But if you're that middle tier where you're making a middle class living as a musician, the minute you get off the road, you're not making money anymore. That's really hard if you need maternity leave. Yeah. So I think about stuff like that when I think about how we can change to make the music industry better. But on a local level, there's little changes like why can't we for 6 months have weekday shows Monday through Wednesday be where music starts at 7? Like, why? Like, why can't doors be at 6? Music starts at 7. Like, let's try it. What is it going to hurt? Everybody's going out of business anyway. Yeah. All the venues are being shut down anyway. So, like, what do you have to lose?
That's so true. And a whole separate discussion is the who's responsible for what portion of the promo to sell those tickets. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You want to have a rant alert. Oh, yeah, gosh.
Maybe we should start a new podcast about that.
Yeah, it's just me ranting about venues. But I understand their pain. I get where they're coming from. I see both sides of it. It doesn't make it okay that the venues are not supporting the artists to get people in. They really put all the onus on the artists, charge them to play in the room, and then keep the entire bar. So even if you do a really good job and you do bring a lot of people out, you're only going to get however many people that room can hold. You're not going to get any incentive. It's not great.
Yeah.
But with venues also going out, you know, they're in this prime real estate, on a tangent, but they're in this prime real estate, but they're only open for 6 to 8 hours a day. Less than that, most of the time, only a few days a week, but they're on Ballard Ave and their rents are huge and they're skyrocketing as that real estate gets higher and higher. So just, I don't know, like, obviously not working, but nobody's doing anything different. It's something I'm working on. So I'm working on opening a venue space in Belltown.
Oh, sweet.
Surprise. I didn't put it in your pre-show notes. So I'm working on opening a venue space that will utilize all of the time. So it'll have a level where we have rehearsal spaces and teaching rooms. It'll have co-working. It will have music. So it will be bringing in revenue and accommodating all levels of musicians, all types of musicians, and then also being a space where audiences can come that works on their schedule, on the modern person's schedule. So we're not going to have those shows that start at 11. Yeah, like, this is in New York. It's Seattle. We have work in the morning. So, yeah. And I mean, I see the same thing, like, you know, other cities, like, Stockholm is a really quiet city at night. They're not like a party city. And so all of their stuff I noticed when I was there starts super early. But London is like a party city and all the shows start like super late. So right. I just think that every city can be a little different. But Seattle specifically, like you said, on the micro level, I think we could really benefit from earlier shows and really going into working with the Amazon and Microsofts of the world and not against them. And not just railing against them.
I agree 100% because A, they have the capital to support it. B, to your point, a lot of them moved here for that.
Yeah.
And they're very solution oriented. You're talking to, what, 80% engineers at some of those firms? They're very solution oriented.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some would love to participate. I mean, heck, some of the artists in the scene are those same tech folks.
Exactly. Yeah. I think people are often surprised when they find out I have a day job and that my day job is working at a software company. But it's not all bad. It's not all bad. Everyone in my office is an artist. We're all photographers. So it's like, I work with a bunch of artists all day. We just happen to make software. But, and I think that I don't think we need to change much, but we do need to change and evolve because what we're doing isn't working. It's not helping anybody. And everyone's just mad and yelling at each other. And no one's like trying something. Like, let's just try a bunch of stuff and see what works instead of like fighting and fighting and fighting. Like, why can't all the venue owners get together and say, you know what? This isn't working. Let's start shows Monday through Wednesday at 7. And we'll do that for 6 months. And if it doesn't get better, we'll put them back to late shows. What does it hurt? Nothing. It costs nothing more because the hours just shift earlier. I'm sure the bar workers would love to be able to like get home before midnight.
Yeah. So. And to your point, there's nothing to lose if those nights are unsuccessful already.
Yeah.
To try something out.
Yeah.
If they're the same level of unsuccessful, then you get to pick.
You get to pick. And at least everybody gets to go home and go to bed.
Yeah. This was so fun. Thank you so much for opening up the space to have this chat. And before we sign off, would you mind highlighting where people can find all the resources that you were talking about or for Women in Music, your personal, your coaching services, all that, if you've got stuff to plug.
Is this it? The shameless plug?
Yeah.
I have no shame about it, actually. So Women in Music. So it's because we're an intersectional organization. It's WOMXN in music.com. You can find our website. You can shoot me an email through that. We also just launched our merchandise. So if you want to support, you're not maybe a booker or in a band, but you love the idea of supporting women, go and buy one of our shirts. That's how we pay for the programming. And we are hoping to roll out grant programs for our artists and make this a worldwide global thing. And that happens because people support us. So pick up some of our merch, hire us to book music for your events. Let us consult on whatever gender issues that you're having. We're happy to help and be a resource for you, and share about women artists. So that's my Women in Music plug. For Kitten Teeth, I'm actually sunsetting that part of my career right now because Women in Music has grown to such a point that everything I was offering for Kitten Teeth, I'm now offering to the members of Women in Music exclusively. So if you do need PR, booking, management, marketing help, you can do all that under the guise of Women in Music, and all of the profits go to the programming. So it's not just me. We actually have a team of women who are all being hired under Women in Music to offer all those services. And we're hoping that that will help generate more revenue to keep growing the organization. And then if you just want to find me, you can just Google me, Nikki Barron. My website will come up. You can learn all about me. And from there, you can stay in touch about my venue that I'm working on. It's called The Sound. You can follow us on Instagram. We are The Sound Flagship, which will be our first location.
Awesome. Thank you again so much. This is all really exciting, and I'm excited to have this out in the world. So thank you.
Thank you. Who's gonna welcome the graves with me? Who's gonna sink down 6 feet? Yes, sir.
That was Cemetery Picnic by Amanda Winterhalter. Huge shout out to Nikki for being on Made for Music. It was truly, truly an amazing conversation. This Thursday, February 13th, Women in Music is hosting Bummer Shoot 2020 Galentine's Day Edition at Connor Burn Pub, featuring Kate Dinsmore, Leah T, Marina in the Dreamboats, and Claire Michelle. For all things Women in Music, be sure to check out their social media profiles. All their events are on their Facebook page, and Women in Music is WOMXN in Music. They also just launched a new column, No Man's Band, on Artist Home to explore stories instrumental to the equitable treatment of and creation of opportunity for women in music, so be sure to check that out. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you dig what you hear, please be sure to rate and subscribe to Made for Music, and I will see you next time.